From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, that is, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started officially with
the Daily Datagram.
You've got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. And this one comes to us from the late, great Oscar Wilde, who said, "No man is rich enough to buy back his past." That's true. But then again, the shrewd capitalist sells it in the form of a tell-all.
No good will come of this.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of the big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Should be exciting.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Everybody knows.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
There you go. All righty, kids, it was on this day in 1910, the oldest existing indoor ice hockey arena, still used for the sport in the 21st century, Boston Arena, opened for the first time. They still use the arena today because they found that hockey players can lose teeth just as easily and just as quickly in old arenas as they can in a new expensive high-tech facility, you know? And it was on this day in 1943, Albert Hofmann accidentally discovered the hallucinogenic effects of the research drug LSD. He intentionally took the drug 3 days later, and he's been tripping ever since.
If you want to blend into a crowd of drunken Greeks, there's nothing better.
Ever since the election of Joe Biden, Antifa's been pretty quiet. Ought to tell you a little bit more about what side of the political fence Antifa favors. But in an important development following a pretty shocking event that rattled the community, authorities have successfully apprehended a suspect linked to the detonation of an explosive device outside the state attorney general's office in Montgomery, Alabama. Well, why there, of all places? Well, okay, keep listening. The incident, which happened February 24th, resulted in no injuries, no structural damage, but has been a focal point of a pretty rigorous investigation, and for good reason. Kyle Benjamin Douglas Calvert is a 26-year-old resident of Irondale, Alabama. He's been charged with the malicious use of an explosive and possession of an unregistered destructive device. Now, this arrest marks a critical juncture in the case, shedding some light on the potential motivations behind the act and the methods used in the execution of this crime. Kind of a caveat here. If Donald Trump does indeed win in November, you can pretty well bet Antifa violence will ramp up, and it's going to ramp up a lot. But I think another thing you can bet on, too, is that this time around, Donald Trump isn't going to play any games with these people. Now, let's get to the explosive device. This part's interesting. It was characterized by authorities as an improvised explosive device. Remember that term, IED? And it was notably enhanced with nails and other shrapnel, with the intention, of course, to maximize its destructive capability. And this detail underscores the severity of the threat posed by the device itself and the intent to inflict harm. Now, you remember Andy Ngo, right? Man, you talk about great journalism. Andy Ngo is the poster child for great journalist. And he tweeted, "Breaking, a suspect has been arrested in the bombing of the Alabama Attorney General's office in Montgomery on February 24th. According to court documents," and he posts them, "Kyle Benjamin Douglas Calvert had extensive Antifa propaganda," he allegedly used, "around the time of the bombing." Okay. It's kind of a small detail, but an important detail. So enter further investigation that revealed that Calvert allegedly placed stickers on state buildings on the night of the explosion, and the stickers bore messages advocating for various political ideologies, including Antifa, anti-police, anti-immigration, and customs enforcement sentiments. And this aspect of the case points to a politically motivated act. Adding complexity, of course, to the motivations behind the bombing, that's always the case. But I think it's getting harder and harder for anyone to deny that Antifa had political motivations. I mean, think back 5-6 years ago with the Antifa violence we had, particularly the violence we had in 2020. It's pretty hard to deny that they were politically motivated. Now, authorities were able to track Calvert's movements through video surveillance, thank goodness. They matched his vehicle to license plate analysis, license plate readers. And then they corroborated this with social media analysis and an examination of his mannerisms and the explosive device itself. And this thorough approach played a pretty crucial role in identifying and apprehending this guy. Now, if convicted, Calvert faces a mandatory minimum sentence of 5 years in prison with the possibility of, and this is where it gets interesting, a possibility of up to 20 years. And this range reflects the seriousness of the charges and the potential consequences of the action. Now, in response to the arrest, Attorney General Steve Marshall expressed relief and gratitude, of course, toward the feds and local partners involved in the investigation. And he emphasized that the incident was not a random act of violence and highlighted the significance of the federal charges, which carry substantial prison time. And Mr. Marshall, who's served as the state's attorney general since 2017, is known for his staunch Republican views, including a lot of criticism of Joe Biden's border policies and support for the Supreme Court's 2022 overturning of Roe v. Wade. And his political stance and the nature of the attack suggest a deeply polarized backdrop against which this incident originated. So, going to continue watching anything and everything that comes across my desk with the name Antifa, because it's becoming more and more apparent that if Joe Biden indeed is the candidate on November 5th, he's going to lose to Donald Trump. And if this happens, I think you can pretty well expect Antifa violence just to go through the roof. Hold on to your hat for this one, my friend. A group of left-wing anti-war activists was seen guided in a chant in Farsi at the Teamsters Union's Chicago headquarters Saturday, yelling, "Death to America and Israel." There's video footage of it. And it was obtained by the Free Press. An estimated 300 activists gathered over the weekend to hear from organizers throughout the country who were planning to allegedly disrupt the DNC convention in August. Now, a clip that was posted to X, this was on Sunday, showed an organizer with the Anti-War Committee Chicago, identified by the outlet as Shabir Rizvi. Now, Rizvi stood in the middle of a circle of listeners wearing black masks, which that's never a good sign, seen attentively paying attention to the organizer. So Rizvi stated as the crowd echoed his chant, "So I'm going to teach you a chant in Persian that you can use if you ever encounter those Zionist freaks, whether they be Iranian or whatever, all right? Now, I don't drink margaritas, but we all know what a margarita is. We all know what a bar is. So are you going to say, Marg Bar, Marg Bar Israel?" So the crowd echoed Rizvi's Marg Bar Israel 3 times before he could then be seen walking off camera with the crowd clapping for him. But Rizvi quickly ran back into the middle of the circle to clarify what the saying meant, depending on who asked and leading a second chant. I mean, this is almost like there's Middle Eastern insurrection going on right on our soil. So Rizvi stated, so it has 2 meanings, depending on who's asking. It could mean death or down with. at which the crowd laughed. They thought, this is pretty funny. Ha, ha, ha. So then a crowd member asked, can we get a Marg Bar America? Rizvi said, we can get a Marg Bar America. Yes, we can. Marg Bar America. So then the crowd repeated the chant, monkey do, monkey see, or monkey see, monkey do. Monkey here, monkey do. So they repeated the chant twice before Rizvi then walked off to a thunderous applause. Now, the chants were not the only ones recorded Saturday. While Rizvi's talk came before the news that Iran launched an estimated 300 drones, you know, that attack on Israel, another clip shows a large group cheering after hearing about the strike. And this is according to the reporters at the Free Press. So, Milwaukee-based activist Omar Flores said, it's really inspiring to see that people are just as enthusiastic and maybe even more enthusiastic to march on the DNC as they are to march on the RNC. We can thank Genocide Joe and our movement for that. I want you to digest that for just a minute. And I want you to remember our open borders. I'm not saying these people in question, these people in this story, came across through our open borders. But you get the idea, right? Oh, my friend, this country of ours is so, so screwed. Our security has been compromised over and over and over again ever since day one of the Biden administration. Oh, but there's more. Pardon me for sounding like one of those infomercials in the middle of the night on TV, but there's more. A man identified by the Free Press as Hatem, and I hope I pronounced this right, but then again, who cares, Abduyeh, then can be seen running up to the podium announcing that Iran launched their airstrike against Israel. Well, you can imagine what the crowd did after that. I mean, the applause got even more thunderous. So, Abduyeh says, they believe that they'll be in Palestinian, I don't call it Israeli, airspace between 2 and 4 a.m., which means about 2 to 4 hours from now. In addition, there are reports of drones having been fired on Israel from Yemen and Iraq. So then this guy, Abduyeh, continued to tell the crowd that the United States would hold on to their support of Israel and said that it should be assumed Americans would retaliate against Iran. Then the crowd could be heard booing at Abduyeh's assumption before he stated that it's incumbent for Americans to stop the United States from expanding this war and hitting Iran. This guy, Abduyeh, I think they went out of their way to create these names so that people like me would never be able to pronounce them. I don't know. And anyhow, Abduyeh says, we've got to be the strong, powerful anti-war movement that we are. And I love the way he phrased that. The anti-war movement that we are. They're not anti-war. They're not anti-war at all. They're pro-kill the Jews. And we all need to understand this. So anyway, Israeli officials later confirmed that the airstrike from Iran was 99% blocked. And that Iron Dome system, or what? It has a different name now. But it's very thorough. It worked very well the other night. But now Iran is busy about the task of making all kinds of threats against the United States should Israel retaliate against Iran. Well, understand, just for the purpose of fairness here, that Iran's attack Saturday was in response to the Israeli attack earlier that killed, what was it, 7 Iranian officials? Something like that. So, I mean, you know, here again, you look at this as an outsider and you sometimes get the idea that you're reading Mad Magazine's spy versus spy cartoon. But there's nothing cartoonish about this. And if we had a real diplomat for a president, which we don't, we have a puppet whose strings are being pulled by Barack Obama, who hates Jews. He hates Israel. He hates America. And we've got to get this bastard Obama out of the White House. Let a real statesman step in and command things like an adult. I'm talking about Donald Trump. Forget about his nasty little tweets. That's not important. What's important is the preservation of the Judeo-Christian culture in the world, not just the United States. And if we don't stand up now and start fighting for it, we're going to lose it altogether. Someone who's regarded as an expert on these matters says President Biden is sleepwalking the United States into another catastrophic war in the Middle East, as Israel right now is preparing a retaliatory strike after Iran's missile attack of last Saturday night. Now, Biden, should I remind you, who's 81, is facing mounting pressure to silence critics who claim he's allowed tensions in the region to escalate as the threat of an Israeli counterstrike on Iran looms. And make no mistake about it, there are a lot of people in this world who are afraid that Israel will retaliate. Why? Well, because of the natural escalation of these tensions that would occur. I mean, you have to make considerations for that. So anyhow, Fawaz Girgis, who's a professor of international relations and Middle Eastern politics, the London School of Economics, was talking to NBC, and he said the strategy of the Biden administration has failed miserably. Biden is sleepwalking the U.S. into another catastrophic war in the Middle East. His overarching goal of preventing the war in Gaza from escalating into neighboring countries has failed. Biden has failed to influence Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's decisions, either in Gaza or towards Iran. Well, elsewhere, Israeli Defense Forces, you know, the IDF, have a spokesperson by the name of Peter Lerner who confirmed yesterday that Israel's retaliation could mean strike or no strike. Lerner said they're considering a wide range of options because there are a lot of different scenarios to consider. He told reporters that the Israeli government will decide on the steps forward in the coming days. And Lerner added, he says, just because we were successful in intercepting, we shouldn't underestimate what Iran did. Good point. Now, Netanyahu's war cabinet was expected to meet yesterday afternoon, local time, to decide on Israel's next steps. An Israeli official said the war cabinet favored retaliation, but was split over the timing and scale of the response. There are all these little minute details that have to be taken into consideration. And Biden's warned Netanyahu that the U.S. was not going to participate in any Israeli counteroffensive against Iran. Now, with Israel and Iran now teetering on the brink of open warfare, Jerusalem's European allies rushed to call for restraint. So there's concern everywhere, not just here in the good old USA, but all of Western Europe. And Josep Borrell, the EU's high representative for foreign affairs and security policy, told Spanish radio station Onda Cero, he says, we're on the edge of the cliff and we have to move away from it. We have to step on the brakes and reverse gear. UK's Foreign Secretary David Cameron, yes, he's still around, sought to downplay Saturday night's attack. And he told Sky News, he says, of course, if you're sitting in Israel this morning, you're thinking quite rightly, we have every right to respond. And they do. But we're urging that they should not escalate. Well, how can you respond without escalating? Any response, any physical response against Iran would be an escalation. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that Israel shouldn't do it. But it's like Sir Isaac Newton said, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Action, reaction. Action, reaction. Reaction, reaction. And this just goes on and on and on until somebody finally says, okay, that's it. But how far do you have to go? How much damage do you have to go? How many millions of people do you have to kill before finally somebody says, all right, that's it? I mean, read the history of World War II, particularly the year 1945. Look at what it took to finally bring an end to that conflict. So Cameron continued, I wanted to mention this. I want to quote him right here. He said, in many ways, this has been a double defeat for Iran. The attack has been almost a total failure, and they revealed to the world that they're the malign influence in the region prepared to do this. So our hope is there won't be a retaliatory response. Well, I think we're all hoping that. But as he said that, I couldn't help but think of Neville Chamberlain in 1938, waving that stupid piece of paper around as he got off the plane after the Munich conference. Now, French President Emmanuel Macron also urged Israel to set its sight on isolating Iran rather than escalating the situation, while German Chancellor Olaf Scholz warned Iran not to carry out more attacks. Now, just so that you know, Germany is very pro-Israel. I mean, you know, let's forget that 12 years of Nazism and trying to eliminate the Jews. Germany is an entirely different country these days. And Germany's taking a hard line against Iran. Now, this Iranian attack, which in the media is always referred to as an unprecedented attack, and it was launched in retaliation. I want to mention this again. This was in retaliation for an Israeli airstrike on its embassy in Syria, the Iranian embassy in Syria, April 1st. Now, it caused fairly minor damage, with most of the missiles and drones being shot down by Israel's Iron Dome defenses and allied forces from the U.S., France, the U.K., and, I found this one interesting, Jordan. So Jordan is kind of looking out for Israel. But this situation is serious. Although the only serious injury reported inside Israel was a 7-year-old girl from a Bedouin community who was struck in the head by shrapnel. She wasn't identified. She remained in a life-threatening condition at Soroka Medical Center in Beersheba after undergoing surgery. But the girl's father, Mohammed, said, "It fell on us into the house at around 2 in the morning. She was sleeping in the house, and we immediately took her to Soroka Hospital." And that's all they had to say about that little incident in this big story. But that's really the complexion of this conflict. There are hundreds of those types of stories, innocent people getting hurt. And really, the only way there's going to be a resolution to this business between Israel and Hamas is to wipe out Hamas. I promise you that. You must wipe out Hamas. Here's another move from the White House we need to figure out. President Biden's reportedly considering using a new executive action to stem the flow of illegal migrants crossing into the U.S., a move that experts say would do little to actually move the needle on the border crisis. Biden said this week he's examining whether or not to take executive action and raise asylum standards, making it more difficult for illegal migrants to claim the status and come into the country. Now, the policy could be beneficial, but it's only one aspect of a multifaceted approach that's needed to address this crisis. And moreover, what Biden's considering is likely a ploy to appear tough on the border to voters ahead of an election year. I mean, there are going to be a lot of little scams that are going to be exercised by the Biden administration between now and Election Day. He may actually try to lower the prices of gasoline. I mean, it's possible. I wouldn't hold my breath. But immigration has overtaken inflation as the top issue in voters' minds, believe it or not. And that's according to a Harvard Caps Harris poll released on March 25th. But what happened since this poll was taken is gasoline prices have gone up anywhere between 20 and 50 cents a gallon. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. This is just, it's a dog and pony show is what it is. And it's not one bit entertaining. So Jessica Vaughn, Director of Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies, said that if Biden confines his executive action to just tweaking the asylum laws, that's meaningless. If he continues to wave people in on parole and hand them an indefinite work permit, and while it's fair to say that it would help if Congress were to act, the most impactful actions must come from the president. And that includes shutting down the catch-and-release policies, imposing consequences for illegal border crossing, ceasing the issuance of work permits, and allowing Immigration and Customs Enforcement to do their job in the interior. Now, immigration parole programs, which allow a non-citizen without a visa to come into the country temporarily, have been dramatically expanded since Biden took office in 21. You've got over 2 million migrants that have been granted parole under the Biden administration, compared to roughly 300,000 under the Trump administration. And that's according to the leftist Washington Post. The Biden administration is also expanding its provision of work permits to both asylum seekers and green card applicants. So many illegal immigrants have entered the country that it's created a backlog of over 3 million asylum claims in immigration courts. These are just the cases going to the courts. Think of all the cases that will never see a courtroom. And it can take years for just a single claim to be litigated. And immigration judges nationwide have an average backlog of over 4,500 claims each. Heading over right now to the Comedy Corner with Chris Frangiola.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me in your wonderful city. Been to Utah before. Ma'am, in this day and age, you cannot cough anymore. That canceled an entire NBA season right there. This woman will be dead in a month. Are you happy? All right. This is fun. They told me to be clean, 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 clean. I'm trying. I've been to Utah before. You have a wonderful state. This is a beautiful city. My last time here, however, I was performing in Vernal, Utah. So you guys understand what I'm talking about. Yeah, I was in Vernal, Utah. Performing, no kidding, I was staying and performing in a Motel 6. That's right. Third floor, staying on the third floor, and the show was at a sports bar at the bottom of the Motel 6. Pretty nice, right? So I asked the woman at the front desk, I said, what time's the show begin? She said, 5 p.m. I said, 5 p.m.? That doesn't sound conducive to comedy. She said, what's conducive mean? I was like, oh, forget it. Let's just move. Let's just do the show. So I walk into the sports bar, 5 p.m. They got a stage. Behind that stage, there's a TV. And on that TV, they're showing Judge Judy. They got Judge Judy on. It's 5 p.m. It's Judge Judy time. So I said, could you shut up Judge Judy while I'm performing? And the bartender said, I'm sorry, we can't. Some people in the bar are interested in the verdict right now, so we're going to have to let that play out. So I said, all right, well, here goes. And I performed in front of Judge Judy. Did it. Made it. Finished the show. I'm a professional. Turns out it was a pretty interesting case. Just kidding. Now I'm done with the show. Finished. Now it's 5:45 p.m. And I'm still in Vernal, Utah. And I said to the woman at the front desk of the Motel 6, I said, is there anything else I should see while I'm here? She goes, as a matter of fact, there is. She goes, down the street a ways, we have a 24-hour Walmart. It's 24 hours, 7 days a week. It never closes. You might want to check that out. I said, yeah, I'm going to check that out.
Make it a terrific Tuesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.